And welcome back to Speak Up Las Cruces. I think he turned me down there. This next half hour, we're going to be talking with Pamela Court. She is running for re-election to her seat in School Board District 2 against Christina L. Moore. Christina Moore was invited to come on our Today Show. She did not respond to our invitation. And we are very glad to be joined for the next half hour by Pamela Court. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my goodness, Walt. Thank you so much for having me and for accommodating me this morning. I'm really excited to talk to you both today.
Yeah, and we are, too. I sometimes think we don't get enough a discussion of the school board, and so we are happy. I always start with asking incumbents the same question, and that is that I assume that when your term comes up, there's a moment where you have a little bit of self-reflection and maybe some discussions with family, and I kind of assume that there's a process that people go through before deciding to run again. And if so, can you kind of tell us a little bit about that and why you did make the decision that you want to seek re-election?
That's a great question. And yes, I had many moments of reflection thinking, should I or shouldn't I? It is a lot of work, but it's beautiful work, and education has just been a part of my life. I was a classroom teacher for 31 years. 26 of those years were at Las Cruces High School, deeply embedded in this community, especially from an educational standpoint. And just seeing the work that I have done on the board and the beautiful people that I serve with on the board made me decide, yes, this is something that I want to do for four more years. On the board, you know, we speak as one voice, but we have really made a difference, I believe, in the schools. We've created really important policies on anti-bullying, gender inclusivity, sustainability, and safe schools. We've promoted intellectual freedom by ensuring that school library books are available to all students. And we've also expanded the budget process, and it's a very transparent process where our budget process starts from the ground up with the teachers expressing their needs to the principals moving, and it moves up that way so that the majority of our budget does go towards teaching and learning. And we've also we've created a new career technical education center and a family support center, and this just creates more opportunities for students. And because this work is so exciting and because this work, I believe, is not yet finished, that's why I'm running for re-election.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I had a question about, well, I'd really like to get you to expand on the career technology education center and what services are going to be provided there. What's the hope and the goal of that expansion?
The hope and the goal of that expansion is that we create more opportunities for our students. And we are looking right now at the Career Technical Center as a middle school and high school center where kids can go and be bused in and take courses that deal directly with careers and with technical careers. So, for example, and all of this is still in the process, but we are looking at, so we have a nursing program so that when, by the time kids graduate from high school, they'll be certified nurses and they'll have their high school diploma. Welding, they'll have their certificate of apprenticeship, please forgive me because I don't know exactly what those certificates are, but a certificate of now we have employable students who have completed their high school degree but also have the experience and the knowledge to go out and begin working. It's super exciting. There have been different things like this across the state. I know that when I began my teaching career in Albuquerque Public Schools, and we had something called the CEC, the Career Education Center, and it was the same thing, where they would bus kids in from all over Albuquerque, and they would receive cosmetology, welding, nursing, a whole bunch of different types of professions, and receive their certification so that they can go out and be productive citizens and start working right away because they have the experience and the knowledge to do so.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about, you talked about intellectual freedom, and that issue, the library issue, has probably been the most public one, where there has been outspoken disagreement with the board. Can you just talk about a little bit about your own thought process on that and how you come to a determination as to age appropriateness? And certainly that's something that there is no exact answer to. Everybody has to kind of has their own standard, I guess would be the best way to put it, as to where that line is when it comes to age appropriateness, especially. How do you approach that?
So I like to think that books are always appropriate, and so I don't really like that term age appropriate, but I understand exactly what you're saying. I believe that every parent has a right to help choose what their child reads and also what their child learns. And we do provide for that in Las Cruces Public Schools through a policy that I'm sure you are aware of because of the publicity this has received, and it's policy KEC. What I love about what that policy says is that parents, as I said, have a right to determine what their children read. And no parent has a right to tell other parents what their children can read. And I think that drawing that line there is vital and important, because I don't want one parent to tell me, I don't like these books, and I don't want any child to read them, because that's not that other parent's choice to make. That's my choice to make. I had two kids that were educated and graduated from Las Cruces Public Schools, and I of course taught there, but we always had the option. You can call the school, you can have something on your child's account in the library that says, I don't want my child to read any books by a certain author, or you can choose titles. And there, it will say so on the account, and the librarian will not check out those books to that child. But if I want my child to read those books and they are available in the library, then I have the right to say so. So, age appropriateness, it's just, once again, I don't really like that word because of, I want children to have access to all of the books. And you often see yourself in other people's stories, which creates a validation of maybe some trauma that you've been through. Not a validation, but it's encouraging to know that somebody else has gone through what you've gone through, and they've made it through the other side. And books give you hope. And I firmly believe that libraries save democracy.
Mm. Yeah, thank you for that. And I had a question about public safety. So we just got done speaking with some candidates for city council, and public safety continues to be at the top of the priorities. And I know that within the schools, that seems to also be of concern. And so I just kind of want to understand what your philosophy is around public safety and like in terms of the schools, or school safety, I should say, and how that gets implemented in the schools.
It is definitely on everyone's mind and becomes the top talking point all the time when I'm speaking with the public. Through our work with the board and our great team in our central office, we have created some great safety systems to make sure that all of our students are safe. I'll just do a side note that I'm a firm believer in Maslow's pyramid of needs. And if your basic needs aren't being met, there's no way that you can learn. And safety is one of those basic needs. So we have everybody who walks into a school. Number one, there's a Ring camera, so the secretaries, the people in the front office, can see who's coming into the school. Once you come into the school, you need to now sign in. We have a new system. It's called the Verkada system. And you sign in with your ID. Because of this, then it runs your information through a lot of systems. Are you the person who is allowed to pick up the child? What's your association? Why are you here at school? And all of those things. And once your ID has been validated and you are all good to go, then you can enter the building, and only then. We added additional safety measures in our middle schools and high schools by putting weapons detection systems in all the middle schools and high schools and at the two or three entry points in all of the schools. And that's where all of our students and visitors file through at the middle and high schools. And what that does through the system is we can, if they get flagged, and these weapon detection systems are just those, I don't know how to describe it, but you know, those things that you walk through, like if you were going to a football game or you're going to a concert, it's something that will just pick up anything that doesn't look right. And if there is something there that doesn't look right, then you go to a secondary search area. But it's really been streamlined in the high schools. We've talked to the students. They feel like it makes them feel safer that is happening. Are there other multiple entry points in the school where people can come in? Yes, and we are definitely working on those. Just when you have those big expansive campuses, like I taught at Las Cruces High and was there for all of that construction, there are lots of entry points, but we have our school resource officers and other people who are watching and making sure everyone who comes into a school either has a visitor's badge or has an ID. We are making schools as safe as we can. If somebody wants to come in and wreak havoc, we're going to do everything that we can to make sure that doesn't happen. That was a very long and rambling answer, and I hope I answered your question.
It was a very important question. So, yeah, I think long and rambling was fair.
Yeah, thank you.
okay.
I wanted to ask about the results of a survey that surprised me a little bit that the district put out fairly recently, showing that there is now support among parents and residents for the year-round calendar. And I guess the reason that surprised me a little bit but was because there was so much pushback when it was first introduced. The idea that you would be disrupting traditional family trips and being able to go see grandparents and that kind of thing. But now that it has been in place for a little while, obviously it does seem like it's being more accepted if the survey is accurate. And are you starting to see the results academically that you hope you would do by making that change?
That's a great question. And I was on the board when we decided to do that. And yes, there was massive pushback. And I think that when you change things that have been happening for such a long time, it does take quite a bit for people to go, oh, okay, I think this is working. I love it that now there is more community support towards that. And we speak to students because those are the people that we serve. And if we don't have a student voice, then we're not doing our job. And the students really love the fact that there isn't, that summer break is shorter, that you don't end up spending the beginning of your school year reviewing everything, and that you can just move forward easier with retention. I also like it that we feed many kids in our school, and so when we send kids on break, we make sure that they have the meals that they need during the break, but they're less and less, right, because they are in school more. We are seeing the results, but the problem is that COVID is messing with our results, and having the kids learn online was definitely not the best way to go, but it still kept, hopefully, students engaged and learning at a time when nobody knew what was going on. I lost my point there, but I love it that the community is rallying around the year-round school. The benefits are that we have kids in school learning and safe and yeah, having those basic needs met, the growth that we're seeing is coming. COVID set us behind. That's where I was going with this. COVID set us behind, but we are seeing growth. One of our goals in our strategic plan is that 100% of our students will meet their growth target. And so what we do is we meet students where they are, and then we try to move them forward. And their growth target is that if you are a third grader, that you will move to a fourth grade level by the end of the year. Not all students are there, but my personal goal is that every single student grows in the way that they need to. And for some, it will take them longer to get there. Others, they may exceed that, but that we are addressing student needs where they are. And I think that the year-round school system allows for us to have that more time on task, time with students, giving students the individual supports that they need so that they can grow and be successful.
Yeah, thank you for that. So thinking about academics and performance, I'm curious, what are your thoughts too about the annual testing? I'm not really sure. I think a few years ago, several tests that we subjected our young people to, and maybe now it's just one. In any case, what is your philosophy and what are your thoughts around that? And since your tenure, how have those test results been, I guess, hopefully improved?
Yes. I am not a big fan of the one-shot testing where everything is laid down on the line for a test that lasts several days. I have seen kids freak out. I've seen them throw up. I have, because it's such a huge pressure for one test. Maybe they're sick. Maybe something horrible happened at home and they showed up to school, and yay, they showed up to school, and now we're making them take this assessment where we are going to gather all of this data about them and create, involuntarily, but create a judgment about the students and how they do. I am a bigger fan of formative assessments where we call those one-stop assessments summative, right? They are, this is the summation of everything that they've learned. As a classroom teacher, you spot check, and you spot check often to see if students understand. Because if they're not understanding your concept when it's being presented or when they need to give the feedback on it, then you really can't move forward. Because then you end up with students who have, I'll just call it, for lack of a better word, holes in their foundation, right? If we say that 60% is passing, that essentially means that the student is only understanding 60% of the material, and that other 40% is lacking. And I digress because my teacher hat came on really fast. So I'm not a fan of summative testing. I understand that we need to establish those benchmarks as we move forward. Yes, our testing, we're using iReady, and we're using that across the board, and that has shown improvement in what we do. And what we're looking at a district is we take our beginning of the year data. So we test all the kids at the beginning of the year and say, here's your starting point, here's where you are. And then we go to the middle of the year and do the same assessment and say, have you grown? Has there been improvement? And then we do the same at the end of the year. And then I like that rather than just doing one. The state requires, I believe, still that one test at the end. But I like that our district takes those three measures, and then we look and we see where the kids are. And due to advanced technology, like even I retired in 2019 and it's much better right now, we can send that data directly to the parents so they can see, oh, my student is still struggling with fractions, and here's where the work is that needs to be done.
So, Go ahead.
Long answer. My apologies, Walt. Long answer. There you go.
Well, and Daisy's question kind of set up what I was going to ask, and that is just my opinion. I think the biggest mistake the state has made in terms of education was going from an elected board to an appointed secretary, where we had 8 years under Susana Martinez and Hannah Scandera, where the view of education in New Mexico was radically different than what came before under Bill Richardson and what has come after Michelle Lujan Grisham. And so I guess my question, as a local school board member, can you talk a little bit about those wild swings at the state level and how that impacts you guys?
That's a great question. And they are wild swings, and it does become very political. What that has become for me for the New Mexico Public Education Department is there is no consistency. There is no institutional knowledge that and granted, you always have to change with the times, but if nobody knows what they're doing because they're all brand new, because a new secretary has been appointed, which brings in a whole other crew of people, it creates chaos. And that chaos makes its way down to the districts because of course we create policy and our budget and everything according to state guidelines. And if the state guidelines aren't clear because leadership has changed, then it really does a number with the districts, and especially the smaller rural districts who, they need a lot more assistance because they don't have the resources, and it's hard when you're not getting direct communication from the PED. I know that we had a state board of education under Governor Bill Richardson, did Bill Richardson
drop it?
I can't remember.
Yeah,
anyway,
his first year in, he convinced the voters to change it.
Exactly, and I think that if we had, and there were problems with it, and that's why they changed it, and right. I honestly don't know the history of why it was changed, but I do think that if we did a board of, as you were speaking, I think that would create a lot more consistency. That would create some institutional knowledge and guidelines so that when we move forward, whether we change governors or whatever, that we still have that sense of consistency.
Right.
Yeah, and thank you for that. And on the ballot, this election season is also a school bond. And I was just wondering if you want to talk a little bit more about that and what are your plans if the voters say yes?
Oh, please say yes. So our bond issue that's coming up on November 4th will not increase taxes, keep taxes where they are. And the main thing that this GO bond issue will do is help us renovate Mayfield High School. Mayfield High School is such a great school and with a great staff and lovely students, but their school is really literally falling apart. It's going to cost, which this number astounds me, but it's going to cost $200 million for us to renovate that school, with the increased cost of construction, of everything. That's what we're looking at. Yeah. So when we do this, the district portion is estimated at about $114,000, and the state will cover 86, which means we're covering 56 or 57-ish percent, and the state's covering about 43. We need the bond so that we can do this renovation. We had a student from Mayfield High School on the dais talking to us about the fact that when you go upstairs and you're back in a certain corner of the school, that the floor is wavy, that a teacher has to sand down their door often because it's sinking. And there's plumbing issues. There's a lot of things going on. So please pass the bond bill or the bond, so that we can improve that school. will the students who are there now see anything? It's going to take 8 to 10 years to complete. When we redid Las Cruces High School, when I was teaching there and in the middle of all that, it took about the same amount of time. So students who are there now, we'll start to see things happening with phase one, and they can have a say, as well as the staff, in how they want their school to look and how they want to go forward. So phase one is planning and design. And I know that when we redid Las Cruces High School, we were very much into, the architect came in and said, how should the classrooms be, talking to the students, what kind of spaces do you need? So it'll be exciting for the students now to have a say in how the school is going to look in let's hope 8 years rather than 10 years. It's also going to do HVAC systems for a couple of schools who really, really need them. And then it's helping. It's helping your public school. It's helping your kids learn. It's creating spaces where students feel safe and can learn.
Once again,
I don't know how to plug it anymore. Vote yes. Vote yes.
We have been talking with Pamela Court. She is running for re-election to the Las Cruces School Board in District 2. We're down to our last 2 or 3 minutes. A lot of issues that we haven't had a chance to get to, transportation, a lot of things. I guess my question is, what do you think is important that we haven't asked you about, and what would your final message be to both the voters and to the parents and residents of the district?
So my final message is, I have the experience to continue on the school board. We are required by law to attend training every year as a board member. I've attended, I believe, every training, and I get over and above my required hours, mainly because training is important, but that's who I am. I'm always the one who wants extra credit. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I didn't mean to cut you off there at all. Please, this is your time.
Okay, no worries. If you wanted to ask a follow-up or anything, I can move forward with that.
No, please go ahead.
Okay. So because I've been an educator for so long, I was the New Mexico Teacher of the Year in 2013, which allows me to have a vast network of educators across the country where we can talk about how policies are happening nationwide, what's happening with budgets. Because really, when you look at it, a school board member can do 4 basic things. We are in charge of the budget, we create and review policy, capital outlay, we're in charge of that, and then the superintendent is our one employee. Those are the things that we can do. And because of my experience as an educator, because of my 4.5 years on the board and seeing the beautiful progress that we have made, I believe I am the right candidate for people to vote for District 2. District 2 basically runs down the center of town. I start at Tombaugh Elementary and end at MacArthur Elementary, interestingly. It's a big, wide swath. I have 14 or 16 of the 41 schools are in District 2. So it's an important district, and I don't take any of that lightly. I am in the schools, visiting with kids, visiting with staff and teachers, and I understand what it is we need to do to move forward. And I so appreciate the time that you have given me today to talk about these issues. Thank you.
Well, we appreciate you coming on and speaking to our listeners.